You're done.
Good morning. Today is April 27th. This is the Education Subcommittee for Ways and Means. We welcome all of you here today. We thank you for coming back if you were here last week. And if you weren't, we welcome you today to testify on the issues concerning our public universities. I always think our public universities are the best in the nation. So, you know, other facts might be out there, but I know we all work hard in our roles, and we have some tremendous educators in our system. So I hope.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
They do a pretty good job considering we don't give them enough money.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5024.
This committee could change that.
Senator, we're trying.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're going to have a pop can drive on Saturday.
Okay.
Okay. That's how we used to do it. Or we could have a cakewalk, whichever, you know, brings the most money. We've counted the names that have signed up to testify, and we're made an executive decision up here to give each of you 3 minutes instead of two. But if you have a two-minute presentation, that's always appreciated, so that if other people come and sign up, then we do have plenty of time. So our first group, if we'll have groups of three, unless you have a friend that you absolutely want to have come up with you. Oh, I see, because the first four are PSU students. Did you want to come together?
Only 3 chairs.
Oh, there's only 3 chairs? Oh, well, I guess there's just 3 of you then. Brianna Holgate, Monty Heron, and Rob Fulmer. And then on deck for the next group would be Laura Neeson, Jackie Yates, and Taylor Putman. And so the committee knows that our first group's from PSU, and most of our next group is from OSU. And we can have the ladies start or the gentlemen.
Okay. I just want to thank you for rescheduling and taking the time to hear from us again, because the room was really packed last week. So my name is Brianna Holgate, and I'm a freshman at Portland State University. This year alone, I've accumulated nearly $10,000 in debt, and if I continue to pursue my degree at PSU, I'll graduate with well over $35,000 in debt if I manage to graduate in 4 years. I'm a first-generation college student, and my parents were so proud when I was accepted to PSU after serving a year with AmeriCorps and doing volunteer with disaster relief. My father didn't graduate high school. He received his GED and has been working at a factory for as long as I can remember. And my mother worked long hours in an emergency room until she couldn't anymore. The estimated cost of my attendance for my freshman year alone was more than my parents make in 1 year combined. This education isn't accessible to low-income families, and breaking the cycle is becoming increasingly difficult. I've listened to my mother apologize time after time that she wishes she could have done better for me or done something differently. The thing is, my mother suffers from seizures weekly and multiple sclerosis. And if you aren't sure what that is, in short, basically her immune system is hyperactive and is slowly destroying her brain and nervous system. I've been to doctor's appointments with her, and she had a doctor tell me, I'll be lucky if she remembers who I am, her own daughter, in 5 to 10 years. She's the one apologizing. Apologizing over circumstances that she can't control. Wanted her to be able to see me graduate from the university and know that she believes that her as a mother did not fail me. It's not her fault. It's a systematic funding problem. And as if there wasn't enough weighing on my mind, I was going to school full time as well as working 15 to 20 hours a week for the university to pay back the university. I've chosen between food and books. I've worried about being homeless while studying for finals. I've accepted getting C's if that meant I could work a few more hours to make ends meet and afford my tuition. I currently stay on the couch of a friend's apartment because the cost of being a freshman at Portland State University was too overwhelming for me, resulting in having to withdraw from classes and not being able to finish my freshman year. But I'm not the only one. This is one of many stories focused on how to pay for school. Despite receiving heavy pushback, PSU Board of Trustees voted for a 5% increase on tuition. They had come to this decision because higher education is not funded at the level needed. This is why so many students are here today and have been here before. We cannot afford this anymore, and we want $7.55 for higher ed. Thank you.
Thank you, Brianna. You did a great job.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, respected members of the Education Subcommittee.
My name is Monty Heron. I am also a first-generation college student. I'm Native American from a low-income family background. I successfully pursued and obtained a bachelor's degree with a double minor at Portland State, but it was never without struggle. I spent 2.5 of those years sweating and getting heat stroke inside a mascot uniform as the embodiment of PSU school spirit as Victor Viking. I earned a competitive scholarship for my tribe in addition to that small athletic scholarship. And with those things completing my funding, I am now a graduate student for the time being at Portland State. The hard truth is, though, without the scholarships I'm receiving, I couldn't afford to go to school or get my degree. With scholarships and loans, I only have about $1,200 per term or $300 a month to purchase my books, a phone, basic necessities, groceries. I don't know how long it's been since you guys had to try and get by on $300 a month, but if you could do it, I'd love to see it. It's very difficult. What I'm looking for is for my lawmakers to show me that they care about Oregonians and their future. Stop investing in incarcerating Oregonians and start investing in our education. We need this 755. And full funding and sensible reform, how that would look, I mean, to me, it looks like things like Portland State's enrollment level is such that if you combine OSU and U of O's, you don't hit the number of students that are at Portland State, but we're receiving a smaller slice of the pie than those two schools. Yeah. Tell me where that's equitable or fair, because we see the results of it, and the results of it are that lower income students are being squeezed out of their education. We're being priced out of our degrees because we're not getting a fair slice of the pie. So I would ask that you not only do you have it within your power to fund us fully, but you also have it within your power to investigate this inequity in the OSU, in the Oregon University system, because we need to have that. We need to have that taken care of. So that's all I'm here to humbly ask for you to do today.
Thank you. And Ben Cannon, the director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, just stopped in, and I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to you for a few minutes. Ben, he's talking about the inequity between Portland State, U of O, and OSU, what that tuition looks like and how it breaks down for the system. So, and Mr. Fulmer.
Thank you. Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. My name is Rob Fulmer. I've worked at PSU supporting the IT needs of students and faculty for more than a decade as a member of SEIU Local 503. I also serve on the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. As you are aware, the HEC voted recently to change the funding formula by which funds are distributed from the University Support Fund. Southern Oregon University's response has been to tell the SEIU team negotiating the 15-17 contract that they can't agree to be part of a single contract for all classified university workers. They need to reserve the right to offer their employees less pay for the same work. The problem doesn't lie with the new distribution model, a model that for the first time includes funding for completions, particularly for the less well-off, veterans, rural students, and underrepresented populations. It rewards more for degrees in health, bilingual education, and STEM fields. It was designed for and is intended to point us in the right direction for 40-40-20. But we're not going to get there without a substantial increase in the size of the funds to be distributed. No one is ungrateful for the co-chair's proposed increase in funding over the allocation in the last biennium, but much of that increase will go to pay for the continuation of the tuition buy-down and debt service on capital bonds. And universities are responding by raising tuition, in some cases substantially, to maintain current service levels and improve graduation rates. I have spoken with some of you about what can be done to find the revenue needed to better invest in Oregon. Reform gain share, tax e-cigarettes, and increase levies on tobacco products to be more in line with neighboring states. Student testimony at the recent HEC meeting and here today has been clear. They can't afford for the state to ramp up its higher education reinvestment as slowly as the most recent co-chair's budget proposes. Oregon's universities need $755 million. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. I can't resist. Can you do a PSU chair?
A PSU chair?
Yeah.
PSU doesn't have a standard chair other than the one that we usually do is, you know.
Guess we don't.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Yes.
All the I have 2 degrees from Portland State, and all the disadvantages that were enunciated, Portland State does have one advantage over the other institutions. It is the best transit-served institution in the whole state, with over a dozen bus lines, one max line about to be a second max line, and streetcars.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And here before us are Laura Neeson, Jackie Yates, Taylor Putman, and on deck is Carrie Wylam, and Terry Walters, and Sophie McGinley.
Good morning, Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, and committee members. My name is Jackie Yates, and I want to start by thanking you for your time this morning. I was born and raised here in Salem, so Oregon is and always will be my home. I'm now a sophomore at OSU, pursuing a major in psychology and a minor in Spanish. My time at OSU has taught me a great deal about the importance of higher education and what it is that keeps students enrolled, thriving, and engaged during college. As students face the challenges of financing school, accruing debt, and meeting their day-to-day demands, the goal of graduating is the biggest hope for counterbalancing the burden of debt. Even though the co-chair's budget is an improvement over what the previous governor proposed, it still doesn't fund us at the level the legislature provided for Oregon universities in 2007. If we want to meet the needs of tomorrow's workforce and help Oregon students attain their education, we need the additional $85 million in state funding for our universities. At OSU, student retention programs like the U-Engage program for first-year students have helped me stay afloat and led me to opportunities such as the one I have right now, testifying on behalf of my peers in Oregon and their shot at graduating. My hope is that if we can simply attain the same level of funding that Oregon provided in 2007, college students today will have the same opportunities I've been afforded. In light of budget cuts over the last 8 years, I respectfully ask the committee to approve the additional $85 million in state support and bring us back to the 2007 level. Thank you again for your time and consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, and committee members. My name is Taylor Putnam, and I'm from Tigard, Oregon. I'm currently a junior at OSU, pursuing dual degrees in business management, finance, and a minor in economics. And I'd like to start today by thanking you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here in support of an $85 million increase in appropriations for the 7 Oregon universities. Any increase going to OSU will be aimed at increasing student retention and graduation rates. From my experience at OSU, I strongly believe in keeping students enrolled and engaged as one of the most important steps that universities can do for the problem of student debt. I served as a peer leader for an Intro to OSU course, which Co-Chair Comp actually got the chance to speak at, that helps first-year students find connections and resources on campus. I also work as a tutor on campus in an effort to keep students ahead on material and motivated in their coursework, and I take great pride in my ability to be able to participate in programs that increase retention. These programs have had a huge impact both in exposing me to issues and topics, increasing my study skills, and being more involved on campus. The biggest concern you hear from students today is regarding their student debt. But by putting more resources into ensuring that students attain a degree, universities help put them on track to earn a higher salary, therefore alleviating the pains of repaying their student loans. The $85 million increase to reach the $755 million funding level we're seeking will help students succeed and graduate. This 755 may sound like a lofty number, but it's actually quite conservative. It is the same amount of funding that Oregon universities received in 2007. In 2007, I was 12 years old, and plenty has changed since then, but this number does not even account for inflation or the 20,000 more students that are currently enrolled in our universities. It's alarming to see that though total state resources have significantly increased over the past 8 years, the funding put into education by the legislature has essentially plateaued. Thank you for your time today, and I hope to count on you to support another $85 million in funding.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Monroe, Comp, and committee members. For the record, my name is Dr. Laura Nissen, and I'm the Dean of the School of Social Work at Portland State University, and I'm very proud of all the students that are here today. I'm here to ask your support for our request for $755 million for public universities in the next biennium. The money that we're asking for is not for the universities overall, it's for the students who are facing heavy debt loads and inadequate services, especially in social work, where I live and work, but especially true for students across the entire PSU family, where we have the most low income, first generation students, and underrepresented communities of color and veterans in the entire state system. These are all students who deserve and need more support, but we have less and less every year available to give them. In my school, social work, our students are a special group. They are often first-generation students, often with very complicated backgrounds of their own. They make a lifetime commitment to serving and representing the most vulnerable in our society, focusing in such areas as homelessness, child abuse, neglect, and juvenile justice, drug and alcohol addiction, trauma and mental health, human trafficking, health, aging, and disability, school social work, domestic and interpersonal violence, and various forms of community organizing to advocate for civil rights and equity in various identity groups. And again, many of our students, a large proportion, have direct experiences with all these issues. To highlight the compelling need and our financial vulnerability of our students, almost half reported food insecurity in a recent study that we did inside the school. And we define food insecurity as, again, over half our students reported that they were worried whether their food would run out before they could purchase more. They had experienced their food not lasting and didn't have money to get more food. They couldn't afford to eat balanced meals or cut the size of meals or skip meals because they didn't have enough money for food. Imagine the scenario of a student working with those who do not have a home and yet being hungry when they go to do this work. And then imagine that scenario multiplied by hundreds and hundreds of students. That's our reality on a daily basis. Amazingly, in the face of these challenges, our faculty and our students believe that the world can and will be a better place if they invest everything they are in building solutions. Some of them are future social workers planning right now to enter the field, and they need your help. The state of Oregon very much needs your support and your dedication to making successful lives possible for not only our students, but the many, many communities that they serve. This investment multiplies itself many, many times over. Please support the 755 budget.
Thank you so much, Doctor. We appreciate your time this morning. Okay, our next panel that's coming up is Carrie Weiland and Terry Walters and Sophie McGinley. And after them is Mackenzie McConnell, Jacqueline Mayorga, and Amber Portes.
Good morning. Thank you for, my name is Terry Walters. I work at Eastern Oregon University, and I'm a regional director and advisor for students at distance. I am a product of the Oregon University system. I have my bachelor's degree at Eastern. I have my master's degree at Portland State, and now I work for Eastern. I was on a 30-year academic plan, which means that you go and stop and go and stop and go and stop. And I serve people and students that are trying to better themselves. I receive so much from the Oregon University system and the public education that I have spent the last 12 years giving back because I gained so much. I was a non-employed, and I will tell you this, that as a non-traditional student, I serve mostly non-traditional students, and many of them are lacking education, and so they can't be promoted in their jobs. I think, and I find that educated students get good jobs and are higher taxpayers. And that's why we invest in our people, is because our education and our educated people pay taxes, and there's more revenue. So therefore, we need to support and invest in our students. And that, whether or not it's the larger education system and the schools or our smaller institutions, Southern, Eastern, Western, and OIT have really been hit hard, and our students feel it. So we're asking for your support. I do appreciate the committee considering all of our testimonies. We thank you for your hard work, and thank you for considering each of us and hearing all of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Co-Chair Comp. I'm Carrie Weiland. I, too, am a regional director for Eastern Oregon University. Can you hear me okay? Okay.
Julie's the person that answers those tough questions.
You can hear me? Okay. I deal mostly with non-traditional students. My office is actually located in a community college campus on Umpqua Community College. I am there because they want an opportunity for place-bound students to be able to continue and get their bachelor's degree when they can't move out of the area. I deal with a lot of first-generation students and single parents with incredible issues. I'm just going to give you a personal story of how I've had to backfill for some students because of lack of funding. I had a young mother who has two children. One was three, and then they had another one, and they didn't have financial aid. They'd run out of financial aid. And I needed an appointment with her. She was supposed to come, and I was going to do some stuff with her. And her husband came in, and he said, Kim can't come. She's at home with the baby because we can't take her out of the house. And I said, is she ill? And he said, no. We have no money, and she has no diapers, so she's just kind of running around free willy. We can't go anywhere. And they don't have transportation. They were taking a bus. And so I took it upon myself. I'm thinking, okay, there's this baby wandering around the house doing who knows what where. I went and bought cleaning supplies and diapers and products for her, which food stamps doesn't cover. And you know, to help those students be successful. And that's how invested I am in those students. I know that I went to college, married with two kids, worked 30 hours a week, but I could only take 12 credits a term because I couldn't keep the balance to be successful. And my wish is that something would happen with the new funding formula so that those students who are working, that are single parents, that are trying to get ahead and better themselves, that the funding model doesn't jeopardize them because they can't take 15 credits a term. Three classes is a good norm. It's not how many credits you have, it's how many classes you have. And to keep that balance and be successful, I hope that you will help them have that opportunity.
Thank you so much, and thank you for going out and getting those diapers and cleaning supplies. It's bad enough when your puppy does that, but
yeah, no, they were in tears when I went to their house.
And yeah, truly a gift.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do.
Thank you.
Hello, good morning, Chairman Rowe and Chair Comp and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sophie McGinley. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in front of you. I am a freshman studying political science, and maybe some other things, but I'm a freshman at the University of Oregon. And I think you've heard the same thing a lot over and over, but I'm going to work on the student orientation staff this summer. Okay. At the university, and it's my job to make students feel welcome and to make college seem accessible. But icebreakers can only do so much to make college seem like a possibility. With this increase in funding, students will be able to afford college, and it's going to seem like a possibility. And it's just, you know, I have the Summit Scholarship, which is $8,000 a year, and that's been wonderful, and it makes college something that I can afford. And the fact that something as little as $8,000 can help me so much, I think says a lot. And, you know, I plan on staying in Oregon after college and working for Oregon. And it makes me so sad that students aren't able to come through. I feel like I grew up in a relatively middle-class home, but I was unable to co-sign for a loan because my mom is unemployed. So she wasn't able to co-sign. And, you know, that was devastating. And I have to figure out how to afford my junior year now. But so if I'm not able to afford junior year and I have to take out loans through other means, I will have $14,000 in debt. which, you know, that's relatively low for a college student. But it's going to, you know, that's a lot of debt to pay. And sorry, I'm kind of circling around, but it would change lives. It would change lives, and getting that degree changes lives, and it'll change Oregon, and it'll benefit Oregon. And I hope that I can help more than running icebreakers this summer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And grandmas do co-sign loans. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. We have Mackenzie McConnell coming, and Jacqueline Mayorga, and Amber Portrance. And up on deck is Mike Bersota, Doug Badger, and Carlos Crespo. My apologies if I totally put the wrong accent on the wrong syllables.
Good morning, Co-Chairman Monroe, Co-Chairman Comp, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mackenzie McConnell, and I am attending the University of Oregon to study Family and Human Services. I am a sophomore right now, and I am part of Pathway Oregon. Pathway Oregon is a program that helps students that are low income and with a certain GPA fund their tuition for the 4 years that they're there. This program made my college experience possible, but I want to look beyond my experience and also look at the students that were also Pathway or funded in some way. And it's an incredible opportunity because even with this funding, where our tuition is paid for, we either take out loans, or I have two jobs. Most of my friends have two jobs. We're going to school full time. And I also just like to look at the students who aren't getting this funding for tuition and how hard it is for them to go to school, because it is already so hard for us who are getting help. And the $755 budget would help incredibly much when students are looking at how to pay for college. My last point is that I intern at South Eugene High School, and I work with the high schoolers that will be trying to go to college, trying to go to a community college, and you see how much passion they have for making the world a better place, and you can also tell that they just don't know how they're going to make that happen. And I would like to see for the future, them being able to get there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for helping at the high school. I'm sure it makes a big difference.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's okay.
You can
sit up.
Yeah.
Good morning, Co-Chairman Monroe, Co-Chairman Camp, members of the board. My name is Jacqueline Mayorga. You did say that right. Thank you. And I am a student at the University of Oregon. I graduated from McNary High School here in Kaiser, Oregon. Go Celts. I am a first-generation college student, so going to college was really tough for me. And thankfully, I was accepted into the Pathway program and to the Excellent Diversity Excellence Scholarship, which is $6,500. I received no help from my parents because we're a low-income family, so everything has been on my own. Right now, I am $8,000 in debt, so the $755 million would be amazing, just because my sister is hopefully going to college soon, and the Diversity Excellence Scholars can only hold so many people, and this money can go towards programs like Pathway and the Excellent Scholars and the Summit Scholarship. These are all programs that, like me, have made college possible for a lot of people. And I'm also an orientation staff, and I will also be welcoming people in this year. And I just want to let them know that it is possible to go to college, and this money can go a long way for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe and Comp, and members of the committee. My name is Amber Potratz. I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and I am attending the University of Oregon as a political science major who transferred from Mount Hood Community College in Gresham, Oregon. I'm a first-generation high school graduate. I'm also a first-generation high school college student in my family. Both my parents had to drop out of high school because of unique family circumstances, but they've always wanted me and my three sisters to get the education that they were never able to get. We grew up very low income. Most of my childhood was spent below the poverty line, collecting donations from a local church for food and clothing. I'm going to school so I can get a good job after I graduate, and I do intend to graduate. Not just for myself, but also so I can support my parents after I graduate. With the income they're making now, they will not be able to support themselves when they retire, and I hope to be able to graduate and also support them and my sisters after I graduate. The education is expensive, and even though I'm receiving the full Oregon Opportunity Grant and Pell Grant, I still have to work part-time through my college and take out loans to help my parents pay with bills. It'll take me 5 years to graduate because I'm only able to take out 12 credits a term with my financial aid. Even so, for my last two terms, I will have to take out 16 credits if I don't want to spend a 6 year in school. And I have no idea where I'm able to get the money to take out the 16 credits. The tuition increase at U of O will make it harder for me to graduate because I would probably need to take out private loans, which are not an option for me because of my parents' low income and low credit score. I also do not have any extended family who is living, which would be able to co-sign. I was turned down to co-sign by both my parents and my sisters. I was also turned down from private loans without a co-signer with myself. I don't have many options at this point. I can't work full-time because I have a learning disability, which means I need to spend extra time on my homework just to be able to pass my classes. I can't take out private loans. My parents can't support me financially. Somehow I have to find a way to pay for tuition, in addition to paying for books, food, transportation, all the things financial aid will not cover, and which I currently am paying for by working part-time and the credit cards that I was able to get. When I graduate, I will have over $30,000 in loan and $10,000 in credit card debt that I'm using just to pay for my books and fees that my financial aid will not cover. I'm asking you to listen to my story and to fund public higher education at a minimum of $755 million because students like me cannot afford another tuition increase. I need you to do this because I am literally running out of options at this point, and you can do something to change this.
Thank you. Thank you. It is very, very challenging. I appreciate your tenacity.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Mike Barsotto coming up, Doug Badger, and Carlos Crespo. And then on deck is Chaz Lopez and Angela Crowley Koch and Jenny Dressler. Now, I hope you gentlemen can give us all the solutions.
I brought my checkbook.
Well, good morning, co-chairs, comp, and members of the committee. My name is Mike Barsotti. I'm a family forest landowner in Northern Linn County, and I'm here to ask your support for our universities and in OSU Extension in particular. It's been a while since I've been a student. It was interesting listening to the struggles of the students that are current there. I've attended PSU and a graduate of Oregon State. Yeah. We in Oregon, you know, and as you mentioned, are really fortunate to have OSU College of Forestry. It's recognized nationally as a leader in education, research, and outreach. We family forest owners own about 40% of the private forest land and play an important role in the economic and environmental part of our state. We come from all walks of life, care for our land, but often lack the knowledge to manage our lands. So Extension plays a key role in a conduit to the university in where we can share our questions and concerns and hear a better way to manage our forest. Our Extension agent is our answer man. He finds answers to our questions, help us organize training events, puts on tours for fellow landowners, and trains volunteers through the Master Woodland Manager Program. Extension is currently working with helping us develop yield tables for Willamette Valley Ponderosa Pine, how to manage destructive insects for this threatened species, which we are working hard to restore to the Willamette Valley. So, as a member of Oregon Small Woodlands Association, we encourage you to support our universities and Extension in particular. And again, thanks for this opportunity to share why we think extension is important.
Thank you. I appreciate your time this morning and your work on extensions. I don't know of anybody that's at this dais that disagrees with you, but if they want to, they could come talk to Senator Monroe and I. But yes, extensions are a really important part of Oregon. Please go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe, Comp, and members of the subcommittee. My name is Doug Badger. I serve on the board of directors of the University of Oregon Alumni Association. I'm here this morning to urge your support for higher education funding. Since you know full well the numbers that are being tossed around, I thought I would just relay a personal story in the hope that it might underscore the point. As a kid growing up in Northeast Portland, I guess you would describe my household as lower middle class. A great and hardworking single mom, holding things together. I was an average but not an outstanding student. I had some money set aside for college for my grandmother, but I wasn't really focused on life after high school. I had an after-school job as a bag boy at Riverside Country Club, and the head pro there once asked me in my junior year what I was going to do about college. And I hadn't really thought about it, but it was kind of the shove I needed to really start thinking about it. Given where I was financially and academically, I didn't have a lot of options, but that did give me some focus. With the help of a scholarship, grants, loans, a part-time job, and a little savings, I enrolled in the University of Oregon. That 4 years gave me a lot of time to grow and learn. I received an incredible education that gave me the tools to put me on a career. I spent 10 years on the East Coast and then came back to start a business and raise a family. I guess I should say here, since I'm being recorded, that University of Oregon also gave me my wife. So I tell you this not because...
I think that was your role, your job. Yeah.
I tell you this not because it's an exceptional story. It's not, but because it's rather normal. While there are kids in Oregon who are amazing young people and exceptional students, there are thousands more who haven't quite blossomed and need a place to do that. Looking back, my life could have taken many different turns, but I had three things going for me. I had adults who cared, I had financial assistance, and I had a university willing to take a chance on me. More and more, I worry about kids like me, kids who could get an education and grow into productive citizens if they had access to a public university at a reasonable cost. I urge you to find the resources necessary to help our universities keep college affordable for all of Oregon's kids. If you do, I promise you it's an investment that'll bring lifelong benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. And Doug, I'm going to ask you to switch chairs. Representative Williamson's here, so I'd like for her to come up and if you could make room for her. Okay, thank you. Good morning,
thank you,
Representative.
Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is a little deja vu. In 2007, I was the Portland State lobbyist, and I came to this committee to ask for funding. And I was just comparing some notes. So in 2007, there were 19,000 FTE at Portland State. Now there's 22,000. Tuition then was 5,000. It's about 8,000 now. In 2007, we were asking for $693 million. That's the same that's being asked for today. Plus the tuition buy-down gets you to $755. So in the co-chair's budget at the time was $608,000 plus the buy-down. So that was $670. So we are actually...
I think that's million. Not
I mean million,
thousand.
Sorry. So that's $23 million less this year than what we were asking for in 2007. So I just wanted to put that on the record because, like I said, I used to be able to do this in my sleep the way Debbie Kretzky can now, but it's really disheartening to me that we are trying to get back to the place where we were in 2007 when I was much younger and it was much cheaper to go to college and there were lots fewer students. And so I urge you to fully fund at $755 the higher ed budget and help support Oregonians like me, especially who are first-generation college students, reach their dreams. I wouldn't be here without a University of Oregon education, and working at PSU was one of the best experiences of my life. It's such an amazing place to be, and it's so inspiring. And I just want to continue to ensure that students in Oregon have the kind of experience that I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Oh, Representative Huffman has a question for you, Representative.
Representative Wormson, the 19,000 to 22,000 is student count, right?
Mm-hmm. Full time.
Do you happen to have the, back in 07, what the staff and faculty count was versus today for comparison?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Huffman, I do not, but I guarantee that Debbie Kretzky is on her phone right now finding that out, so we can get you that answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for taking time to come and share your experience and your background and your advocacy for our students.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. My name is Carlos Crespo. I'm a professor and director of the School of Community Health at Portland State University. I also serve the state in the Oregon Health Policy Board that oversees the Healthcare Workforce Subcommittee. I want to ask you to support again the $755 million for all the seven universities in the state of Oregon. This level of funding is very important for us to be able to provide the services and the resources that our students need. At Portland State, the students is probably a clear example of the situation that we are in. It is the only state urban research university. It's well recognized nationally. I am the principal investigator of a grant from the National Institute of Health to increase the diversity of the biomedical workforce. We're in a very interesting intersection where we have our baby boomers, demographics, retiring. Our current healthcare workforce is also retiring, and we are providing health insurance to 95-98% of all Oregonians. But that means we're gonna have a lot of people showing up at the hospitals needing care. We're gonna have healthcare providers who are retiring, and yet our universities are not able to educate the next healthcare workforce. So this is very critical, not for just for the education, but also for the well-being of the state of Oregon. 6 years ago, Portland State University started a Latino Student Success Task Force. And I was the chair of that task force. And today, 6 years later, we have doubled the number of Latino students in Portland State University. And that was intentional. And we can see the results of that that effort. These students, just like all students, do require resources, require advising. Our current ratio of student advising is 1 to 600. Ideally, it's 1 to 300. And we need to get there, and we need these resources. When we talk about staff and additional resources, it's because there is what happened in the classroom and also what happened outside of the classroom. I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony, and I look forward to working with you in increasing and improving the education of the students in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time to be here this morning. Okay. We have Chaz Lopez, Jenny Dressler, and Angela Crowley-Kosh. And then on deck is Betsy Earls, Joel Fisher. Joel, you talked yesterday or the day before. Elizabeth Howell, but we'll have you come on down if we can find you today. Please start.
Great. Thank you. Chairman Co-Chairman Rowan, Co-Chair Comp, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau worked for the last 18 months with Oregon State University and other partners to develop a $16 million funding package to support Oregon State University's statewide programs. These include $5 million for the OSU Extension Service, $7 million for the Agricultural Experiment Station, and $4 million for the Forest Research Laboratory. These programs provide critical research and development to our industry and help grow rural communities. The return on investment for each general fund dollar invested in the statewide programs is $10. This is significant for Oregon's rural and natural resource-dependent communities. The proposed package addresses critical needs for water quality and water availability. This is especially important given the drought conditions that we currently face. It also would address the breeding of new crops and really important pollinator research that we've been working on for several years. The package will also help farmers, ranchers, and rural communities help sustain working landscapes. This includes research on the marbled murrelet in our western forests and the recovery of the greater sage grouse in eastern Oregon. Juniper removal and the eradication of invasive species are critical to this effort. We ask for your support of the $16 million funding package for statewides. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
Chair Comp, Chair Monroe, members of the committee, Angela Crowley Cook, Oregon Environmental Council, and I'm here to join Jenny and the Farm Bureau in supporting the statewides and the extension programs, in particular the additional $16 million as that request is reflected in Senate Bill 657 to support increased funding for the important services that OSU Extension and experiment stations provide. In particular, OEC is interested in focusing on funding for the development of integrated pest management strategies and training, fertilizer research and education to support plant quality, farm profitability, and protect drinking water. It's much easier to prevent runoff and pollution than it is to fix it after the fact, so we really support research in that area. And in particular, the Integrated Pest Management in Schools program, and that helps managers of school grounds to make sure that the least toxic methods of pest control are used first, which is great for an environment where children are. The statewide's capacity has been significantly reduced over the past 10 years, and so the current budget recommendations are actually amount to a cut because the 3% increase doesn't really cover the continuing service level costs. So last year when the OSU Board of Trustees developed a funding request, they recommended that $16 million increase, which is what we support, to fund approximately 40 new positions for new and expanded existing initiatives. So thank you for your time. And again, we support funding for the statewide and a little increase over the existing budget. Thanks.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe and committee members, for the record, my name is Charles Lopez, and I am the interim chief diversity officer for Portland State University. I'm excited to share with the committee that our fall 2014 first-time freshman entering class is 40% diverse. These are students of color who have traditionally been underrepresented in higher education who are now accessing an excellent education at Portland State. I want to tell you about a couple of these incredible students. Our office maintains and administers the President's Equal Access Scholarship, and one student who applied happens to be homeless. When we asked why he hadn't applied for the scholarship earlier, he said he thought that there were other students who needed it more than he did. Another student of ours was diagnosed with severe lead poisoning when he was 2 years old, and that was based on the living conditions that he endured. He saw a number of specialists and physicians because they thought he may have suffered brain damage to try to be able to continue his education. He is now continuing his education in hopes to ultimately get a graduate degree in urban planning. He says, I want to apply that knowledge and experience that I obtained from my undergraduate education and will obtain from graduate school to improve urban areas by ridding communities of abandoned homes and buildings that contain hazardous chemicals. I want to replace those buildings with new homes, parks, and businesses that will in turn improve the scenery of urban neighborhoods and additionally lead to less chemical hazards resulting in major health problems in the area. So these are incredible students who have not only suffered adversities themselves, but are hoping through their education to help others. I've also been made aware of another statistic that approximately 20% of PSU students will not return for their sophomore years because of resources and other issues. So my specific ask for the committee is for your support of the $755 million for the public university systems for our students to not only be able to enroll, but to have the resources that they need so that they can successfully graduate. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your stories. Okay, Betsy Earls, Joel Fisher, Elizabeth Howe.
Joel's missing in action again.
Ryan, your handwriting got squished here. Kowalski? Is that you, Ryan?
Yeah.
Oh, good. You can correct me. Please go ahead and start.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries, and with me is Elizabeth Howe representing PVA and Ryan. we lost Joel Fisher, but I'm sure he'll be along at some point soon.
We understand.
Okay. AOI wanted to just express to you our very strong support for increasing post-secondary education budgets to pre-recession levels. Our members identify a very strong post-secondary education as most critical for their businesses and also for their employees. Our members routinely identify workforce issues as one of their absolute biggest challenges. We have jobs that are going unfilled because of skill shortages, and in some cases, workers with the requisite skills need to be recruited from out of the state and even outside the country. The shortages that our members identify are particularly acute in degrees that relate to science and engineering, math, and technical education, of course, and we all know that. The economy in this state is very dependent on a diverse set of industries, and that requires a particularly talented and prepared workforce. Research shows that educational attainment, as you know, is a path toward middle and higher wage employment opportunities, which drive, of course, the economy. And the state's 40-40-20 goal is an acknowledgement of the importance of education for business competitive and individual prosperity. Both those things enhance state revenues, and they're critical for public services. So I think I just want to express to you our support for looking at increasing that budget back to pre-recession levels, as it will strengthen the economy. We have a talking piece that you should see up on OLIS that outlines this position a little more thoroughly and has all the business associations on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Howe. I'm here representing the Portland Business Alliance. Just to add to Betsy's comments, Oregon is not doing an adequate job of investing in preparing our own residents for the quality jobs that Oregon businesses have available. Post-secondary funding is the only state program that has not reached pre-recession levels. Oregon ranks 47th in terms of support for post-secondary at only 63% of the national average. And between 2007 and 2014, state funding for public universities decreased by 38.2%, while tuition increased by 41%. Oregon's post-secondary institutions have done more with less during this time, but the burden has fallen onto students, making higher education more and more out of reach for many Oregonians. So we'll just join with AOI, the Oregon Business Association, Portland Business Alliance, and the Oregon Business Council in asking that you restore public university funding to pre-recession levels. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Ryan Kanowski. I'm a university.
Ryan, I'll say that last name again.
Kanowski.
Kanowski. Okay.
Yeah. And I am a University of Oregon student, as well as a classified member of the University of Oregon. I became a classified member so that I could help ease my debt going in. I get a very good tuition break, but I'm very lucky to have that. Many other students don't get that kind of help that they need. I'm also one of seven of my class of 100 from my high school class. I graduated from Crestwell High School to actually get our degrees. Many of them, it's a very low-income area. Many would qualify, but even with the qualifications to get assistance, many of my peers were just not able to go to college because they just could not afford it. So they've entered the workforce into low-paying jobs, and that's probably where they'll be for quite a while. I'm here because also I have two younger brothers who are in high school who have recently talked to me about considering not attending college because they don't think that they will be able to afford it. They are both 4.0 students and just will not receive the funding, and they're seriously considering it. And it's a trend that I've heard from all of their peers that it's a conversation that's happening that's really quite scary, because not attending college, not becoming successful Oregonians just because we cannot give them the quality education they need and the assistance they need is just, it's going to cripple our state. We need to invest in Oregonians, invest in the ones here now that don't have a fair chance. We need to give them a chance so we can exponentially help ourselves in the future and help our future generations of Oregonians become successful, help our state become successful. We're asking for a $755 million investment to help give future and current college students a better chance. And what we need to stop giving the tax breaks to large corporations. We need to start bringing that money back to Oregon, making people pay their equal fair share, invest in education, both in lower education and higher education. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I hope you can convince those two brothers of yours that sometime you can do it.
Oh, I'm in their ear every day.
Well, and the other comment I would make is it's never too late to start. I didn't start till I was 36, and so it's never too late to start your college career.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to have a final all-star for our last presenter, and that's Debbie Koreski. And if Joel Fisher walks in the door, Julie, tackle him and bring him on up.
Hi, good morning. For the record, my name is Debbie Koreski, and my day job is I'm the lobbyist for Portland State University, but I came to you today as the sister of a future college student here in Oregon, and I brought with me today the lunch pail that put me and my mother through college. This is my grandfather's lunch bucket. He was a coal miner in Southern Illinois, and he worked really hard, and my mom's three brothers worked really hard, and they put six girls through college. And they went on to become teachers and nurses and a loan officer at a bank. And they told the 15 grandkids, I'm the youngest, that if we went to college, nobody could take that away from us, that we wouldn't have to live in a trailer and we wouldn't have to go into a mine and we wouldn't have to get black lung. So when my mom didn't have the money to put me through school, my grandmother pulled out my grandfather's black lung money and sent me to school. So that's how I went to college. 3 years ago, my half-brother, mom passed away, and he ended up back in the small coal mining town where my mom and my dad had grown up. And he was in a single-wide trailer, and his very successful half-sister put her family on a plane, and we flew to go get him. And I was like, this isn't going to be your life. So he's done really well, but and he wants to go to U of O next year. It's $22,000. $22,000. A lunch bucket isn't going to get you through college anymore. That would have been my entire grandfather's salary. The whole paycheck, not part of the paycheck, the whole paycheck would have had to be spent. My brother's lucky. He's going to be Pell Grant eligible because he's essentially an orphan child. He has VA money because our dad's 100% disabled veteran. He will have the Oregon Opportunity Grant if it sustains and makes its way far enough down the list to him. So total, he will have about $15,000 in financial aid. There's still, and he's lucky. He's lucky to have all of that. Most students won't have that. There's still $7,000 left, either for my husband and I write a check, which we can, we're lucky, or for him to borrow, or for him to work off. And that's fully Pell eligible, full opportunity grant, and a VA benefit. There's still a $7,000 gap. So I am here today to say to you that there's so many more parents that still carry a lunch bucket and they want better for their kids. They want them to go to college and they can't send their whole paycheck. I mean, it's just unreasonable. So please prioritize the students. Please prioritize the parents that don't have what my husband and I have, and help make this more affordable and keep that upward mobility for us. So thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Huffman has a question, Debbie.
Oh, I don't know how many staff, but I will find out.
No, that's fine. you brought up something, so I'm curious how it works. Biennia or two back, we passed where dependents of 100% disabled or deceased veterans
have their tuition waived.
Call it, yeah.
So every school, every Oregon university is able, the law was flexible enough to allow the universities like PSU or Eastern, who don't have the financial resources of some of the other institutions, the institutions can choose how they do that. So if your institution has a lot of resources, they may use that as what's called a first dollar. So they may say, will allow you to take your full Pell and apply that towards your housing cost, your dormitory cost. Or if the institution doesn't have enough money to do that, they may say, well, after Pell, and you got the Oregon Opportunity Grant, so Pell's about $6,000, give or take sees. Oregon Opportunity Grant's about $2,000, give or take sees. So U of O, you would still be about $1,200 short. They could say, well, we'll waive the remainder, $1,200. Mm-hmm. So the law is flexible enough to allow that for that, because not every university could have afforded to do that for every 100% disabled, service-connected, dependent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. And I did stipulate in that bill that the universities were only on the hook for the last dollar, mm-hmm. if you will, because knowing that there was federal money out there available and VA money,
right,
for dependents. So, but I was just curious in your
brother's
case.
The DEA benefit right now, I don't know how close you track that, but the DEA benefit for, we're talking veteran stuff, but if you're the dependent of a 100% service-connected disabled veteran, you do get a stipend from the VA to help put you through school. It's about 800 and something a month right now, but it's only for those months that you're enrolled full-time. So it doesn't pay through the summer. It doesn't pay Christmas break. It's prorated for the months that you don't go to school full-time. So, and the universities, I think most universities, if they can waive the full tuition and allow you to apply the Pell to your living expenses, they do. But I think it just depends on their own internal fee remissions and financial aid situation for that year.
Okay. Another question? Different subject.
Yes, sir. I might, Representative Huffman.
Since Debbie's up here and Ben's back there, it's I think somebody testified that PSU is going to have a 5% maximum tuition increase. Is that true?
So the law that we passed, 270, that allowed the institutional boards to take place, says that if university boards want to raise tuition above 5%, they have to go to the HEC for approval. So one of the universities so far has been at the HEC. PSU, our undergraduate, this year is 4.83%, and overall, if you take it, it's 4.2. That's what our board passed. So we were able to stay out of the HEC.
Yes, sir.
You went far enough. You answered my question, because I wasn't sure where HEC got involved and if it was like the PUC where you had to go and justify the increase,
yeah,
but it's beyond 5%.
Yeah, anything above 5% has to go through the HEC for approval.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And one comment.
Hey, don't leave yet.
Totally off the subject. It's not Debbie. I just, something I heard today that's really scary, and hopefully, I know that maybe advisors don't get involved necessarily in every, but the scariest thing I heard today was not $20,000 in student debt. It was the $10,000 in credit card debt that Amber has. That is scary as hell. And I just, hopefully you're talking to somebody getting advice, because that's going to be unbearable.
It really is. It really is. I graduated from college in 1997. It's significantly less affordable than it was even that short time ago.
Yeah. And what I wanted to share with Debbie is to thank you for your personal story. It's not easy to testify and share what you've gone through, and from our first testimony here this morning to you, it's very courageous and appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience that we didn't call that had not signed up? Okay. Well, thank you. I know some of you came from Eastern Oregon to... Did we have anybody from SOC today? Yes? No. But we had a number of students last week from Ashland, and your voices are important. Any other comments from the committee before we close?
Yeah. Madam Co-Chair, I'm really passionate about education. I've been a teacher and a college professor for 50 years. Boy, I wish I could give you mm-hmm. every penny you're asking for. There are two layers of authority above this subcommittee. There's the what we call the big co-chairs, Senator Devlin and Representative Buckley, who try to come up with a balancing act to fund all of the needs of the state, not just education, but all the needs, and basically give us authority to allocate certain amount to education. And they give us the authority to some voice in whether we fund K-12 more, or community colleges more, or universities more, or Head Start and early childhood more, but they don't give us an unlimited amount of money. You know, we have to live within those restrictions. And of course, then isn't the top tier around here is the Senate President and the Speaker, Senate President Courtney, Speaker Kotek, who appoint all of us and also appointed the big co-chairs. So there's a sort of a hierarchy, and we're not at the top. When they appointed this committee, they tried to pick people that had some experience in education and were passionate about education. So I think you will find that every member of this subcommittee is truly passionate about education and would certainly love to do a better job of funding our colleges and our universities and our schools than we have been doing in the past. In the meantime, keep up your effort. There are resources out there, if we just access them, that would help fund education at a higher level. I'm working on that. I know all of you are as well. And Madam Co-Chair, tomorrow we get to start passing budgets.
That's correct.
And if you'll remember from a couple of months ago, we held hearings on the little healthcare licensing boards and so forth. Well, tomorrow we get to start passing those budgets, setting the necessary fees and so on. So it will be important for us to all be here tomorrow at 8:30. Thank you.
And thank you. And any other announcements? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5024, and we are adjourned.
And Paul, I still haven't remembered.
Okay.
Remembered.
Okay.
And Paul, I still haven't.